Thank you, Ms. Grove. Our joint commissioner. Have any spares?
I've got mine, keep them on.
So, Ms. Grace, can you read your summary, please?
Yes. Good afternoon. The rural visitor zone was notified in four locations, with 14 requests received through submissions to apply the zone to new locations. The RVZ implements strategic objectives and policies in Chapter 3 that seek to realise the socio-economic benefits of visitor industry and to retain the district's distinctive landscapes. The enabling of visitor industry-related activities is provided for through a combination of permitted and controlled activity status for visitor industry-related activities and buildings. Effects on landscape are managed through the extent of the zone itself being limited in size, then within the boundaries of the RVZ through landscape sensitivity mapping. The rule framework is directly tied to the landscape sensitivity mapping, with buildings in moderate high landscape sensitivity areas requiring consent as a discretionary activity, and buildings in high landscape sensitivity areas requiring consent as a non-compliant activity. The notified RVZs are all located within ONLs. The RVZ provisions were drafted to reflect the ONL status and the known developments of activities on those sites. They were also drafted prior to the release of the Topic 2 interim decision of the Environment Court on landscape matters. I have recommended changes to the provisions of the chapter to strengthen the management of landscape matters in light of the Topic 2 interim decision, with scope created through a submission seeking clarification of the purpose and extent of the zone. The requests for new RVZs are on land within ONLs, rural character landscapes, and the Wakatipu Basin Rural Amenity Zone. Should the panel decide to accept any of the rezoning requests within the Section 7 landscapes, which is the rural character landscape in the Wakatipu Basin one, I have recommended changes to the provisions to ensure that the management directions for Section 7 landscapes are carried through to the RVZ. I recommend that one of the 14 rezonings be accepted at Gibson Valley Station, subject to some specific provisions. The other rezoning requests and the submission in relation to the notified Arcadia RVZ raise issues related to landscape management, proposed structure plans, residential activities, management of risk from natural hazards, and or fit with the RVZ. I summarise each of these issues below, noting where they remain an issue for submissions. So in relation to landscape management, I have recommended that no rezoning to RVZ occurs unless there is adequate landscape sensitivity mapping undertaken, as otherwise the RVZ rule framework could not be applied. I have also stated my opinion that there is no need to include landscape sensitivity mapping as a structure plan within the RVZ because of the way the rules are linked to the mapping. Appropriate site coverage standards for each of the rezoning sites is another important means of managing effects on landscape. In most cases, there is not agreement between the landscape architects on what appropriate coverage standards are. This is an outstanding issue for the following rezoning requests for which landscape evidence on landscape matters was provided. Heron Investments, the Mangawira RVZ, Loch Linney Station, Hawea Holiday Park, and the Barnhill Morgan Ferry Road site. Landscape matters are no longer an issue for the Maligan Skippers RVZ, Gibson Valley Station, and the Matakauri Lodge, subject to recommended site-specific provisions. Landscape management is also an issue for the sites that seek a structure plan framework as an alternative to the notified provisions, particularly the Corbridge rezoning request and the Arcadia RVZ. I consider that these structure plans must meet the relevant tests for landscape management set out in Chapter 3 for Section 6B ONL or Section 7 landscapes, and the advice of Ms. Millsop and Mr. Jones is that they do not. The status of residential activity in the RVZ is an outstanding issue for the Corbridge rezoning submission and the Arcadia RVZ submission. The RVZ provisions specifically seek to avoid residential activities as a means of enabling visitor industry activities and managing the nature, scale and intensity of development within the zone. I recommend no change to this approach, including in response to submissions on the text of the RVZ. Issues of scope are raised by new requests for residential activity and statements of evidence. Management of risk from natural hazards is an outstanding issue for the Mulligan Skippers RVZ rezoning. I have stated that the nature of the natural hazards present and the risk posed to future visitor industry related activities should be understood prior to rezoning occurring. The RVZ has a specific role to play in implementing the strategic objectives and policies of the PDP. This specific role means RVZ sites have specific characteristics, and I have recommended a new policy to capture this. The sites proposed for rezoning and the specific structure plans proposed for the Arcadia RVZ site need to fit into the specific role and purpose. Where they do not, I have recommended that RVZ is not an appropriate zone for the site. This is a particular issue for the Corbridge and Arcadia submissions. I'd just like to quickly provide a bit of clarification as well in relation to the Aurora submission on the RVZ chapter. The recommended standard that I had included in the chapter is the subdivision standard, and it should in fact be the zone standard. I can provide a updated wording, but I understand the panel has the zone standard for Aurora.
We can do that in the required version of the chapter.
Text of the zone first, your questions on that, and then go to the sites. Well, let's suggest you kick off on the text.
Heard me puzzling a bit about how this zone fits into the plan, especially with the new changes through the consent order and the move from having a zone designed for four existing sites all in the ONL to a more open-ended zone that could occur in any rural part of the district, really, potentially. And then there are submissions of all different scales and natures. So it would be good to get your opinion on some fundamentals about this zone, because I know you do say, you know, the proposals need to fit within what the zone's intended to be, and that's what I'm most interested in. So first of all, I want to explore with you the wider planning implications of extending the RVZ outside the ONL. And as I understand it from the zone purpose and the policies, both of which have, or objective and policies, both of which have little gems of information about what the RVZ is, it's intended to be a discrete, is that the word, zone, limited scale and intensity. And is it a sort of specific carve-out, if you could call it that, for visitor accommodation and visitor activities in remote locations to enable people to access and enjoy the district's landscapes? That's policy 46212. And I think there might be a strategic policy around that as well. Is that the sort of...
Yeah, that's a really good summary.
The gist of it?
Yeah.
So there are all those bits. It's discrete. It's for visitor accommodation and visitor activities, remote locations, limited scale and intensity. It was only in the O&L.
Yeah.
And its purpose is to enable people to access and enjoy the landscapes. So and it's an exception zone, and that, well, it will become that, and that it protects the O&L values through its location and the management controls within that.
Yeah.
And it should, and it must protect them to the same level as if it was part of the O&L. And another little quirk is that because it's remote, there is provision for on-site accommodation for workers or people who work or own the businesses.
Yes.
So if you look at that's what it said, and none of that actually says it must be in the O&L, and you've said there's nothing in the strategic directions that say that these can only be in the O&L.
Yep.
But if we look at what the RVZ isn't to be, outside the O&L in the current rural RCL or the Wokatit Basin, are there any areas that one could call remote?
Yes. The RCL covers a reasonably large area, not quite as large as the O&L, of course. There's potentially degrees of remoteness. The Skipper's site, for instance...
But that's in an O&L.
It's in an O&L. As a comparison.
That's
yeah, that's right. That's quite an obvious one. The RCL, you won't achieve that same separation or distance, I would expect. But remoteness, I guess, isn't entirely about distance, and that the landscape architect's advice is that the sites. Some have a kind of sense of remoteness if the physical distance is as great as it might be in an O&L.
Okay, so I mean, potentially you're saying there could be locations that have a feeling of remoteness
mm-hmm.
Within the RCL or Wokatit Basin areas.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But are there areas where an RV zone is needed to allow people to enjoy and access the landscape in those areas within the RCL and the Wokatit Basin?
Yeah, that's quite an interesting question. There may be cases... I'm not sure if I could say it's needed to provide access, but some of the submissions do provide that access.
Seems like people that live in the towns
mm-hmm.
come and visit this and stay in the towns mm-hmm. or the other urban zones, they're all out there accessing and enjoying the landscape most of the time they're here
mm-hmm.
without needing to stay in those areas.
Yeah, I guess the RVZ is obviously is about visitor accommodation but also recreation activities, which
yeah.
you could perhaps undertake without staying.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. So,
yeah.
I mean, it could be a recreation activity quite specific to that area. It needs to be there and to enjoy that activity on that location.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of whether a zone is the most appropriate way of providing for that. A zone that is a little mini carve-out from the rural provision.
Yes, yeah. Yep.
I think that whole visitor activity part is often is a bit overlooked sometimes in this zone.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So if we were looking at sites that might fit within the concept of, as it's written, of the RVZ, we might be looking at those sorts of aspects.
Yeah.
Is it remote? Is it allowing people to access the landscape and enjoy it when they might not otherwise be able to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And then the next question is, I suppose, if that's the case, would they need worker accommodation, or is it only remote in a sort of a conceptual sense, whereas there's a town a few kilometres down the road?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Because one of the things that concerned me is that in trying to fit these RVs into the RCL, you've started to, what's the most polite way of saying this, amend the wording a bit of what was intended. I mean, the most obvious one is to start saying they're generally remote.
Sure.
And because that's, to me, that's a huge change from remote. Because, well, what do you mean by the sites, that the RVs are generally remote? Do you mean that some of them are and some of them aren't? Or they're a bit remote, but don't have to be that remote? You know, what were you intending to mean by that?
I think I was allowing a little bit of flexibility.
Well, which bit?
For
of flexibility?
When considering an individual, whether an individual site should be zoned or not.
So you were looking at it on a site-by-site basis, so you're not saying as a whole they're generally remote, so you've got some that are remote and some that aren't remote, or are you saying that each site is generally remote? They're quite different concepts.
Sure. Let me think about that for a minute. Yeah, it was a collective assessment, and that sounds like I contradicted what I just said earlier.
Yeah.
But it's when I mentioned site by site. So a lot of often an RVZ site will be remote, but it may be that one site might not be as remote as the others because perhaps it meets all the other criteria in quite a strong way. So it allows that kind of consideration of the overall purpose as opposed to kind of like an individual checklist of all the things that it needs to have.
So why bother to say that it's remote at all? Because if it meets these other criteria and that can override remoteness, then you could have them, most of them not remote.
You could potentially take remote out if the other things were emphasised. Remoteness is linked to that access to the landscape, and so that's quite a strong link. And the other thing to consider is the ability to have the on-site worker accommodation, and that's linked to the remoteness. So I think remoteness is an important part. Maybe the flexibility that generally provides goes further than it needs to.
Well, I mean, that's my concern, is that by trying to be flexible and saying, well, there might be some locations that aren't that remote, maybe not remote at all, but provide access to the landscape that wouldn't otherwise be able to be enjoyed to the same extent. Because we're talking about a zone here, we're not talking about a one-off resource consent for four-wheel driving or something. And they don't want on-site worker accommodation, so there's no sort of worry about that. So you're trying to provide flexibility for things that meet the general intent of the zone but aren't remote. Then by taking that word, dumbing down that, you know, that word, by just putting generally in front of it, it is really opening up the whole of the RCL and the Wakatit Basin to are being considered. And it doesn't say, well, provided that all these other things are met, we might consider some not so remote areas, or that have a feeling of remoteness even though they're not that far away from a town or something. It doesn't say that, it just says generally remote. So can you understand
I can.
That
yeah.
potential to open the door through?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I've got a question here. How important is 46212? Well, what is that? Because there are several policies about this, I'm just wondering if there's any, like whether 46212, which is that's the one you've already talked about, which provide for tourism-related activities within appropriate locations, where they enable access to use to appreciate the landscapes. How important is that policy for determining determining locations?
I'll just read it again. I think that's an important policy for the zone. That's the one that talks about providing access to the landscape,
yes.
And the tourism activities, not just visitor accommodation, for instance.
And so, by putting the word generally into the remote part, alongside difficult to see and largely of areas of low landscape sensitivity, into the first policy. Are you saying that first policy, the new policy, isn't really as important as 46212, or the remote part of it isn't? I mean, are you weighting those policies by adding generally into the remote part? Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, maybe. I didn't think I was when I wrote that bit. I was just thinking about it again now. Yeah. I mean, the policies don't have a different weight to each other. They should all work together as a collective. So I'm just thinking about whether generally remote and location contradicts that one in any way.
I don't want to go on about this because this could take a week. I could talk about this forever and I don't want to. I suppose what I'm saying is that I'm concerned that by adding the word generally into the first policy, you're diminishing the importance of remoteness in terms of a locational attribute compared with the matters in policy 212, which is access to the landscapes.
Yeah, I didn't think it diminished it to that extent.
That wasn't your intention?
No, it wasn't my intention. And I think my 42A mentions about the access to the landscape being the most important bit. And so if there are situations where you can access the landscape and it's not remote, but it's generally remote, then it might still be a good candidate for a zone. But I can see that if you, that generally could dilute it more than I intended.
Okay. Especially if what you mean by generally remote means something that's still a bit remote.
Yeah.
Is that what you sort of...
Yeah, basically.
Not
remoteness.
Hard up against an urban area.
Yeah.
All right. So just moving on from that... Ms. Scott pointed us to, and you have too, the strategic objective 3.31A. I think you've used that policy as a basis for your opinion that there's nothing in the strategic direction, if anything, that the strategic direction points you towards providing for RVZ in the rural character landscapes. Because it says, provide for commercial, recreation and tourism related activities in A, outstanding ones, and B, the rural character ones. And it doesn't differentiate. But does that policy inevitably lead to zoning in RCL rural areas? Because aren't there other ways of achieving this policy through provisions in the rural zone?
Yes, you're right. So I didn't mean to imply that that policy meant there had to be RBZ in the RCL, just that it didn't pose a barrier to that happening.
But it's not an inevitable conclusion.
You're right.
That.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think I've asked this of the landscape architects, but you stress the importance of the... I'm going to the rules now.
Yeah.
Stress the importance of the building coverage standard in the new zones, the overall building coverage standard, which would only allow like one building of 500, up to 500 square metres really, or 500 square metres total. But do you accept, as I think the landscape architects have, that a higher coverage might be applied in specific zones if it was supported by the evidence?
Yes, I do.
Like now?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there any, I'm jumping around a wee bit here, is there any direction in the strategic objectives or strategic policies that would help us with how the plan intends to manage residential activity, rural, residential, resort zone, houses in a RV zone? And, you know, there's sort of this continuum.
Yeah. You're right.
Right through to a
there is a continuum.
Houses in an RVB zone is one of the proposals.
Yeah. So the
what are the where do we get our direction for that?
So chapter 3 has policies about rural living, and I'll just find the actual numbers for you. On page 310. There's a heading rural activities, and they start at some. But yeah, so 3.3.22 onwards is a set of policies about rural living, and yeah, that kind of section includes how that relates to landscape values.
And it indicates in 3.3.22, it does indicate identified on the planning maps as appropriate for rural living. So that sort of indicates that it would be a zone.
Yes, there
purpose.
Are two rural living. There's rural living and rural lifestyle chapters in the plan.
But that sort of points to needing a zone that would then meet these other policies.
Yep.
Yes. Okay. Yep. And I presume, I mean, there are all the urban ones about not having urban development outside the urban growth boundary. So that's another suite that sort of combines urban to the town.
Yes.
What about the resort zone?
There's no policy in Chapter 3 about the resort zone.
That would sort of lead to the direction that resort zones implement.
Yes. Good question. There still is an appeal point seeking essentially a resort zone policy that would provide for or encourage or allow whatever. The court in its topic 2 decision concluded that it didn't have enough evidence to make a decision on it at that point and essentially deferred its decision making to some future time, presumably when it hears one of the appeals seeking a resort zone in the Lockhart River Basin.
Has the council got a position that it's putting to the court on such a policy?
Not at the moment.
I mean, does it even have an opinion that one's needed? Does it have an opinion that such a policy might be useful or not? Or not
necessary? The council's position that it's revisiting it in support of that policy in the 331 Act.
What's that policy?
So,
So a the resort policy, for lack of a better name, so you won't find it in here. No, it was subject to expert conferencing during the course of, I think, topics one and two before the Environment Court. The wording of that policy was somewhat related to the support that various experts gave to what Mr. Barr's just referred to, 3.3.1A. Which is the provide for commercial recreation and tourism related activities.
Okay, so it's like another sort of spin off from that policy, from providing support for visitor activities in the rural zone, potentially
yes.
the RVZ, and then
yes.
the resort zone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just as a matter of interest, whose appeal is that? Because I can't remember a submission. I certainly can't remember any evidence.
I know the lawyer, I'm just trying to think of the
Trojan helmet.
Oh yeah.
Just the chair. That was 2.3.1A.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that doesn't, I mean, there isn't specific policy, strategic policy relating to the RVZ either, is there? Any more than
No, that's
any more
right.
than that policy.
That's right. So I think what Chapter 3 kind of does is it provides that enabling policy, if you like, for the commercial recreation and tourism, and then at the same time it sets out the landscape management that needs to be achieved when you do that. So it directs the protecting ONLs and the maintain landscape character and maintain or enhance. And it also states that the presumption in ONLs is that development is inappropriate, and that the presumption in RCLs is that it is appropriate. So it sets up that slightly different management approach for the landscape values. So the chapter's strong on how to manage the landscape, but slightly less directive on the specifics of what types of development.
How you might go about it.
Yeah, in this particular, for this particular
okay,
set of activities.
So really, for this zone, 3.3.1A is the main direction. And in terms of residential aspects that might be sought in submissions about this zone, we have the other side of the coin in the urban and the rural living policies.
Yeah, yeah.
And that gives us the suite of things to consider.
There's also a strategic objective, 3211, which that policy implements, which is significant socioeconomic benefits of well-designed and appropriate located visitor industry places, facilities and services are realised.
That doesn't get us too far.
No, it's the policy that, the objective that policy flows from.
Right.
Just, Commissioner, can I just ask Ms. Grace, when you talk about those the general presumption, can you give me the references, which policies you're talking about?
Yes, if you give me a minute. I'll actually just look at my 42A because it's in there somewhere. Instead of trying to flip through the chapters when I can't find things.
Oh, it might be 3252 for RCL.
Yeah, so at paragraph 3.7 of my 42A, I reference, get the right footnotes here. Yeah, so 325XX, make sure I've got that right. Yeah, so within the rural zone, new subdivision use and development is inappropriate on outstanding natural features or outstanding natural landscapes unless where the landscape values of outstanding natural features and outstanding natural landscapes are specified in the schedule, those values are protected then when they're not specified, values are protected. And the one for RCLs 3252, yeah, 3252, within rural character landscapes, adverse effects on landscape character and visual amenity values from subdivision or development are anticipated and effectively managed through policies and rules so that landscape character is maintained and visual amenity values are maintained or enhanced.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. That was good. So just wrapping this part up, in terms of the strategic direction, there isn't anything more specific in here about where you might look to a rural visitor zone to meet 331A. Just like there isn't where or how, I suppose.
Yeah, no, not in chapter 3.
So then we need to go to the chapter itself
mm-hmm.
to look for those provisions. Now, just coming back to this question of what when's a resort, and raise this question. We have a definition of resort. We have an idea from the provisions of the RVZ zone, what it anticipates.
Mm-hmm.
We can't look to a resort zone because they're all special. So each of those is sort of bespoke in a
mm-hmm.
way. You have to be careful not to look to those provisions. But we have a definition for resorts. So how do you see the sort of activities that come within a resort versus the sort of activities that the RV zone anticipates?
Sure. So one is a residential component. So as I understand it, the resort definition allows for residential to a slightly greater extent than the RVZ is intended to apply.
But not as its primary function.
No, still not its primary, still not primary function. And then I think the scale and intensity would be slightly more in a resort than in the RVZ. The RVZ quite specifically tries to limit scale and intensity. And the resort definition doesn't have quite the same control on it as the RVZ. Both.
What do you mean control?
Focus. I mean, all we've got for resort, I guess, is that one definition. It doesn't.
Well, it doesn't say where they should go or anything.
No, yeah. But the RVZ is clearly, it clearly articulates scale and intensity.
Can I just interrupt
sure.
there? Waterfall Park's not very big. So is that more that a resort can be?
I can't answer that question. I don't know an awful lot about the Waterfall Park specifically.
I'm just thinking of the spatial area. It's in a very enclosed valley. Like, I don't know what the area is, but it's not very big.
But when you talk about the scale of intensity, you mean of the built development?
Yeah, I do mean of the activities that happen on the site. Rather than its extent, although the RVZ is intended to not be large, but I don't know that I could say how the physical extent of an RVZ in a resort. I'm not sure if there's a direct comparison with that.
Like a resort doesn't have to be
massive. No, it could
land area.
Yeah. Both the resort and the RVZ would still need to meet the Chapter 3 landscape requirements as well, so it's a similarity between the two, if you like.
Just on that being a permit.
What's that? Yes, wait.
Like you're talking about the scale of a resort and the size of a resort, and the definition of a resort is an integrated planned development having low average density of residential development as a proportion of the developed area.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a small site with one house on it, or a very large site with 100 houses on it, it's that proportion that's the key. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is for the residential component, yeah.
Solely for the residential component, yeah.
Yeah. That's still more than what the RVZ would anticipate for residential.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it still has in the resort, but the resort principally provides for visitor accommodation.
Yes.
Yes. So in that way, it's similar to the RVZ.
But it doesn't. Yeah. And it has to have on-site visitor activities.
Yes. Yes, it does.
RVZ.
Yeah. So I think first thing I mentioned of the residential component being that's one difference with resort and
that seems to be the that and the scale seems to be the main difference.
I think some of this is probably a symptom of the RVZ being a bit of a legacy zone, and as I understand so far the resort's kind of the same, so
it's always a trip.
That's right.
Legacy zone and there's a new zone.
Yeah, yeah.
No one sees it that way. No, it doesn't say that. So just another question. Sorry, I'm just moving through these. In terms of the structure plan, you've been quite sort of strict in your evidence, which is fair enough, saying you really don't think you need to use structure plans over and above the mechanism already in the RVZ for the use of sensitivity mapping.
Mm-hmm.
But do you discount the use of a structure plan completely, or do you accept that in some zones there may be a need for some additional identification of specific areas alongside or in conjunction with the sensitivity mapping?
Yes, I think sometimes the structure plan might be useful, and that's something I've probably changed my view on that a little bit as I've gone through the assessment of the evidence and listened to the things happening at the hearing in the last couple of days. And I think the points, there's been a distinction drawn between smaller sites and larger sites. Where the landscape sensitivity is enough on its own, then I think the way the zone's set up, you don't need anything extra. It's just a careful balance, I guess, that structure plan is still achieving the purpose and intent of the RVZ and doesn't require a whole new suite of policies and rules to support it, because then it's almost not an RVZ zone. And I guess that's the point I make with the Corbridge proposal, for instance. But if you're merely identifying different height limit areas or an area where the rules would apply, but to distinguish it from other areas, I didn't explain that very well. But
we're not talking about a structure plan really, we're just talking about some additional mapping.
That's right, yeah. And
identify some additional areas for particular purposes.
That's right, and I guess I have a natural reluctance to add more layers into the plan if they don't need to be there, but if there's a good reason for it like that, then I think it would work.
Especially with the structure plan, which comes with its own little suite of, especially in the subdivision chapter, it's used in a certain way, and many of the, like for example, the Gibson Valley one, where we've got these primary developable areas,
mm-hmm.
and there's a need for a rule, a map, and a rule. That's not a structure plan. That's just some additional mapping.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But you're happy if it needs it and it's supported by evidence.
Yes.
You're not opposed to that level of additional layering of rules.
That's right. Yeah.
And there's also the point that's been made previously. The consequence of having a structure plan is subdivisions then.
That's right.
Then controlled, which may not necessarily be what you want.
I think that's what we were saying. If you've got a structure plan, you get a controlled activity subdivision.
You
don't have to. You could exempt it from.
That definitely needs to be sorted out. But I think
about that sort of thing.
Yes, I think what we're talking about now is not necessarily a structure plan. It's just maybe a little bit more annotation in the maps for the way the rules work.
Well, that's the end of my pretty sure it's the end of my general questions.
Well, in that case, we'll take the afternoon tea break and be back in 15 minutes.